yesteryear.
Howdy, folks.
Yes, it is your old friend Singin' Sam. So let's just settle back and reminisce a bit. What do you say, huh?
With a nostalgic nod toward the Atwater Kent, we now present Same Time, Same Station, a chronicle of broadcasting's first half-century.
Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
Tonight, Bing Crosby remembers radio, Chapter 4.
I love the day.
I love the sea. I love the gentle people
who live in my hometown.
Because those dear hearts and gentle people will never, ever let you down.
They read the good book from Friday till Monday. That's how the week has gone. Got a dream.
A dreaming dream hat. I'll play there one day with picket fence and rambling rose. I feel so welcome each time that I return, as my happy heart keeps laughing like a clown. I love the dear hearts and gentle people who live in love in my hometown.
Before the microphone continues, autumn 1946.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
Time, produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the Rhythm Bears, and Bing's guests, Walter O'Keefe, the Lone Ranger, and Rudolph Schmohopper. And now I would like to present the first Robin of the new year, Bing Redbreast Crosby.
First Robin? You're pretty heavy with those bird introductions, aren't you?
What's the matter, Bing? Don't you like birds?
I love birds. One of my dearest friends is a carrier pigeon. I've known him ever since I was a little child.
Yeah, I'd like to see him carry you now.
This pigeon and I struck up quite a friendship, you know, Ken, when I was a kid.
That's all?
Mm-hmm. I did him a favor years ago by putting his broken wing in splints and nursing him back to health.
Oh, tell me more, Uncle Remus.
Well, when his wing was completely healed, he flew away. And I didn't hear from him for many, many years.
Did he finally repay your kindness?
Indeed he did. A long time later, I was fishing up in Nevada. Happened to run out of bait, so I decided to take a little nap beside the purling stream.
Mm-hmm.
While I was sleeping, that very same pigeon came swooping down out of the clouds and dropped a worm in my mouth.
No kidding.
No, I took the worm, I put it on a hook, I caught a 2.5-pound cutthroat trout.
Really?
Would you believe me, Ken? To this day, that trout is one of my best friends.
Of the carrier pigeon.
War broke out. He joined the Signal Corps. He flew messages all over Europe.
Is the pigeon still in the Army, Bing?
Oh, no. He lives out in the valley now. He's just built a beautiful plexiglass nest on the GI loan.
Oh, no.
I sent him a life-size statue of my brother Everett for the front yard. Twittering about my feathered friend, Mr. Carpenter. The Rhythm Ayers and John Scott Trotter are here with a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho. So let's start pitching a little hay. Flute was a little late. Let's get a better start, then. Where were you, Jack? Gosh, I wasn't ready.
With a hey and a hi and a ho, 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 you start off the day with a glow, ho, ho. Sing all the way as you go home with a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho.
Hey and a hi and a ho and a hi and a hey and a hi and a ho, ho.
Up go the blinds and you know, ho, ho, it ain't gonna rain anymore, ho, ho. Sun's gotta shine 'cause you made it so. with a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho. While you buy the paper, hum a little happy little hum. Got a little caper, singing happiness, here I come. With a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho. You smile from your head to your toe, ho, ho. Pack up your blues as away they go. With a hey and a hi, a hey and a hi, a hey and a hi and a ho, ho, ho.
Thank you, Ken. We tried real hard.
Say, Bing, I've been thinking about that pigeon friend of yours with a new plexiglass home.
Yeah.
You gotten a radio for it, Jim?
I don't know, Ken, but I do know he's having a big nest warming next week.
Oh.
Yes.
Why don't you run out there? Hustle him a Philco.
Oh, yes. After about 1945, right after the war, Bing found this Ampex tape that somebody had liberated from Germany after the war. And he wanted to tape his shows because he said, look, I'm singing songs. I hate to get up here and do them live every time because, you know, they're not always perfect. So he wanted to tape the shows, and NBC and Kraft both said, no, not a chance, can't do it. So Bing said, fine, put on his hat as he's wont to do. And somebody says, no, he just puts his hat on and goes home. And he left and went over and started on ABC with another show.
Bing's attitude toward restraints and restrictions that he considered stupid is illustrated by what happened one day a few months after the start of World War II. NBC was very impressed with being called a defense industry. They issued passes with instructions that no one could enter the building without showing his pass. One Thursday morning, Bing arrived on time as usual, and the man at the artist's entrance said, good morning, Bing, can I see your pass? Called him Bing because he'd known him for over 6 years. Bing said, oops, I forgot it, and started to walk in. He wasn't allowed to enter. There was an argument, I found out, when an alert page called me in Studio B and said I'd better get to the artist's entrance right away because Bing was leaving. I rushed out and caught Bing in the parking lot near his car. They won't let me in, he said. No use hanging around here. I'm going to shoot a little golf. I said I'd get him in, persuaded him, not easily, to come back with me. The guard wouldn't let Bing in on my pass either. I had to call Sid Strohs, NBC vice president in charge of the whole operation. Naturally, Strohs had to uphold the guard. They even wouldn't let me in without a pass, he said. I said, who'd care if you didn't come in? If Bing doesn't come in, you're going to have a lot to explain to Kraft and maybe an hour of dead air. Bing, of course, was right. It was lunacy to start treating people who had been coming in and out of the building for years as if they were enemy saboteurs. Doing it damn near sabotaged the craft music hall for one day.
A captain in the Signal Corps who had come back from Germany. He'd spent some time over there after the war, a year or two. And he brought back, I don't know whether he brought back a prototype of a tape machine or whether he just brought back the knowledge of how to put one together. But anyhow, he built one and showed it to us, and it was practical, and it seemed to me we could get the same result as a live show, taping in front of an audience, and still have an opportunity to edit or delete or interpolate anything that we wanted to do after the show was finished, although lots of times there was no necessity to touch the show at all. And again, you could tape it any day you wanted. You could tape it 2 or 3 days in a row if you wanted, if it appeared that you were going to want 3 or 4 weeks off for a trip. It seemed to me an ideal thing, but the networks didn't want it, didn't like it. They felt it would break up the networks or something, and the trade papers opposed it, the taping, like Variety and the Hollywood Reporter, and, well, maybe not the Hollywood Reporter, but Zitz and the other theatrical weeklies were against it. I think I finally got a little petulant about it, or adamant. I said, well, it's going to be that way, or get a new boy or something, and they yielded, and we did it, and it was very successful, and they see it's universal. Now, and the same thing developed when the television came along, and nobody wanted to. None of the networks wanted to tape shows. I think now 9/10 of every show is taped. Is that true?
Well, NBC and CBS were adamant that they were not going to, and they should have been, because the advent of tape was the beginning of the end of the network as it was. The first Philco programs were made on disc, and they involved a turnover of the disc, and they were dependent on the equipment in the stations. The human element came in, and it was not really a disaster, but it was not good. The records were sent to regional headquarters and then went out from there. They were played in New York at the correct time, then they were played in the Midwest at the correct time, then they were played Mountain Time and West Coast at the correct time. As you know, the quality on a big one of the 16-inch transcriptions varies from the outside grooves to the inside, and the dealers who were radio dealers listened to it, and they didn't like what they heard, you know. And many times there was a switchover and you'd come in the after the introduction of the song or something like that. You know, I mean, terrible things like that.
I think the format of the Philco show was a good deal like the Kraft show, but I don't think we used as many legitimate artists as we did on the Kraft show, as many people from the opera or from the concert field.
Well, guest time has arrived, I see.
Fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty I-O, Silver, the Lone Ranger! Welcome to Philco Radio Time, Ranger.
Thanks, Bing.
Hello, Mr. Ranger.
Hello. Hey, is this your oldest boy, Bing?
No, that's...
that's Walter O'Keefe. He's older than I am.
Look, if I am, I'd better go lie down. It's time for my nap.
Walter, let's not be termagant now in front of the Lone Ranger.
Termagant?
Yes.
Let's get an interpreter, termagant.
This fella is the idol of millions of kids. One of our most popular cowboys.
Well, he's such a big cowboy. Let's hear him sing something.
Sorry, Mr. O'Keefe, I don't sing.
My hand.
Thank you, sir. I wouldn't take up singing even if Silver started playing the piano.
Hey, you know Silver might fool you. I bet you can play the piano. That's a smart horse.
Oh, look who finally picked a smart horse.
Well,
pick one.
Say, Bing, huh? I never hear anything about your racehorses anymore. Where are they?
I wish I knew. There's a big reward out for them for kidnapping jockeys.
All is just joshing, Ranger. I sold my horses to a fella.
For money?
Sure. So, sold them to a fella in Kentucky.
Oh, Confederate money. That's different.
It's different, but it's pretty money. It's very pretty. Well, Ranger, as long as you're here and dressed for the part, supposing we get on the trail of some desperados, I think we should put on a little play here.
Okay. Tell you what, Bing, you can be the sheriff who creep along Crosby.
Okay, Ranger.
And Walter will be the assistant creep. Droop along O'Keefe.
What's his name?
Droop along O'Keefe.
Droop along.
You got that, huh?
Yep. Good. Yep, Crosby creeps and I droop.
Right. Time to him. Will you set the scene?
Certainly, Bing.
Hi-yo, Kenneth away!
Ladies and gentlemen, we now take you back to the days of the last frontier. Our scene opens in the jailhouse of that dusty little Texas cow town known throughout the West as Dusty Little Cowtown, Texas.
I'm the sheriff. Creep along Crosby.
We find Sheriff Crosby barracuded in his own jail.
Hey, that's barricaded, Ken.
Thank you.
No barracudas in Texas at all.
We find Sheriff Crosby hiding in his own jail with his deputy, who's dressed in black trousers with a black Stetson on top of his black hair, and his black eyes peer out from under bushy black brows that match his black mustache. Sheriff Crosby speaks to him.
Say, Red,
my name... My name's Droopalong, Creepalong.
Well, Droopalong is sheriff of this town. I calculate to clean out Three-Fingered Luke and his gang of rustlers.
Three-Fingered Luke?
Yep.
You mean Four-Fingered Luke?
Three-Fingered Luke. Don't you read Winchell's column?
How do you lose another finger, Creepalong?
Well, Droopalong here is sharpening a pencil, one of them newfangled pencil sharpeners, and I forgot to say when.
What's Luke doing with pencils? He can't write.
Don't use them for writing. Use them for toothpicks.
See... That's a good idea. After he picks a tooth, he can put an X on it so he don't forget to pick it again.
Yeah. Well, we've been a-hiding in this here jail ever since Three-Fingered Luke.
I'll read it again.
Where's that good?
I'll read
Where
it
is
again.
He now? Back in the upper rack? We've been a-hiding in this here jail ever since Three-Fingered Luke and his gang came to town.
This is a grim situation, Creepalong.
You're Creepalong.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you...
I'm worried sick.
No, you're Creepalong.
Oh, I keep forgetting.
Well, the situation's desperate. Luke is coming over here and shoot up the jail. Unless we put a gold flame around his picture that's hanging in the post office.
It ain't in the post office no more. I hung it in the bathroom.
Are we out, Jordan?
Yeah!
Creepalong, I'm really on the spot. I got to get me the Lone Ranger. There's our man. We can get him to help us.
Howdy, Sheriff.
Why, it's the Lone Ranger.
What are you doing here, Lone Ranger?
I'm lonesome.
Well, I don't blame you. You've been standing outside there for about 4.5 pages. Hey. What's that piece of rope dangling in your hand there, Ranger?
I've either found a lasso or lost a horse.
Sure good to see you here, Ranger. Where's your Indian friend, Tonto?
Me, John Scott Tonto.
Tonto, he's 2-ton Tonto.
Ranger, you sure this man's an Indian?
Indian? He's a whole tribe. Well, boys, we're not getting anywhere cowering here in the jail. Let's get out and find Two-Fingered Luke. Come on, men. Hey, Silver, come back. I'm not on yet.
Well, that was a good line. You could do so much with sound effects on radio. Get big laughs with the hoofbeats receding. One line, you get a yell.
Pull up here, man. Whoa, steady, big fellow. Whoa, easy.
Whoa, Savington. Whoa, Crampton.
Be very quiet, men. There's Luke's cabin there in the clearing. Everybody down on their hands and knees, and we'll crawl through the sagebrush.
Okay. This crawling is sure tough on your knees.
Keep your head down, droop along.
Say, I'll be... Where are you, fellas? Hey, fellas! Where are you?
Droop along. You're in a gopher hole.
I thought it was kind of dark.
Unless you know them gophers, come on out. We've got to draw our guns.
Say, creep along. You better hold your hand over the muzzle of your gun.
What for?
All the candy's spilling out.
Quiet. Quiet, man. Quiet. I'm going to smoke Luke out of his cabin.
Let me smoke Luke out, Ranger.
Do you know how?
Do I? Well, I've been smoking Luke's for nigh on a 20...
Then start shooting.
Hold your fire, creep along. Luke's coming out.
Yeah, I'll surrender, man.
I knew we'd get you, Luke.
I ain't worried about you or creep along, droop along.
Yes, huh?
Nope. But when the Lone Ranger comes to town, I just gotta come out.
Well, thank you, Luke.
Say, Ranger, can I have your autograph and a silver bullet?
Well, I don't know. Sheriff, what's this man's record?
Well, I'll tell you, Ranger. Let me see here. He's wanted for bank robbing, cattle rustling, pouring pies in water holes, holding up stagecoaches, claim jumping. And he's also 16 cents overdue on his library card.
16 cents overdue on his library card?
Well, it ain't my fault, Ranger. With my shortage of fingers, it takes me longer to turn pages. Half the time, I'm a licking air.
That's no excuse, Luke. Come on, creep along. Let's take this criminal back to jail. Come on, Silver! Hail, Silver!
Thank you, Ranger. Thanks a lot for coming along tonight and joining us in this happy Western hoax.
Well, partner, if you want to round up the high spots in sports this year, throw your rope on Philco Television now. Philco's your brand for the big picture that puts you in the action all the way without bothering to get in your boots and saddles. Rides the whole television range, high, wide, and handsome. Wrestling, rodeos, fight, horse races.
Horses, huh? Yes, we'll pick up something at the 8th pole of Santa Anita this winter, huh?
Oh, no,
in front by five?
Thanks.
Now give me time to get down.
You spoiled it all.
Hurry.
I was going out to get me a 10-gallon hat. Anyway, you're on the spot for every sport with Philco's sensational projection television. The brightest, clearest, sharpest ever achieved by projection. Gives you a picture practically as big as a full-size newspaper page. Big enough to put you right down.
It seemed to me like it was a long way off. It looked like an insurmountable barrier, all the things they had to top. And I don't think anybody thought it was imminent. I didn't really pay much attention to it. I was busy with the golf and the fishing and the hunting and the trips. And I was having a good time. I was going to do what I was doing and await developments.
To see something the eyes of mortals have no right to see. Am I on the earth or in the sky? Lost in loveliness, am I?
I just followed Jack Capp, who was my real guiding star in the record business. Jack Capp was probably the most astute A&R man that ever lived. And he was with Brunswick. And he was responsible for all those groupings that I got on record with, the Mills Brothers and the Boswell Sisters and I don't know how many other things. And so when he went with Decca, I just went right along. He talked me into doing recordings, even though I thought it was ridiculous. I did recitations, Mormon Tabernacle Choir, The Waring Pennsylvanians. I sang with every band there was, every group he could find. I did dramatic things, patriotic things, sacred things. None of them I thought I was qualified to do, but he was right because it gave me a great expansion and extension into every field, and he really made me as a recording star, and I had implicit faith in him. He had good taste, and he was constantly at work looking for new avenues that he could explore and use me as the singer. And I give him full credit for any success I achieved on the records. He died too young, unhappily. A great man.
With regards to Bing's recording, I did a sizable portion of all of the records, the Decca records that he did all those years from the time I came out here, and of course before on Brunswick, I used to substitute for Eddie Lang. And it fell my lot in later years when we were going to do anything of a hillbilly or a Dixieland type nature that it would be my band, a small band thing. Uncle John wound up doing them all on the big show, but I used to do record dates. I did, for instance, You All Come, Dear Hearts and Gentle People, and the Mule Train. On the occasion of Mule Train, Dave Capp, Jack's brother, who was then running Decca, came rushing out to the coast, telling Bing in the afternoon that in order to beat or to come out even with the Frankie Lane's record of it, that we'd have to record it the next, you know, right away. He wanted it now. He says, I can't do it. He says, I have to be at the studio at 9 tomorrow morning. He was at Paramount making pictures. And that was his first order of business. Well, I said, how about 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock for you and 6 for us? He said, can you do it? And I said, well, I hope so. I think everybody will be awake. So at 6 a.m., I met the sound effects man with a whip and a big piece of paper. It was the sound effects man from the Fibber McGee Show. He was an excellent man. I knew he would be good to get the thing. And I got a piece of doweling that Bing could, Mule Train, whop! You know, he'd go whop with his hands and all of that. First, we got the sound effects set, and then Judge Conlon and his group came in. There were five in Judge's group, and I had about six, eight men, kind of a Dixieland type of a Western thing, and which I played, I may have played guitar and banjo, I think, on those. And that's what we did. He came in at 8 o'clock, and we cut the two sides, and he was out of there 20 minutes to 9. He was on the set at 9 o'clock. I never saw anything. He knew the songs. You know, he was up on them. He was not unrehearsed, and he was a fast man. He moved faster than we did.
Mule Train, ah, you old junkhead, take a hold of that boy. Clapping through the wind and rain. Seems as though they never stop. Clippity clop, clippity clop, clippity 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 clopping along. New train. Oh, you laughing little farm or hurry. New train. Clippity clopping along the mountain chain. They're gonna reach the top. Clippity clop, clippity clop, clippity 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 clopping along. There's a plug, a chaw, tobacco for a miner in Corona, a guitar for a westerner way out in Arizona, a dress of calico for a gal in Kokomo. Get along. Clapping through the wind and the rain. They'll keep going till they drop. clippity-clop, clippity-clop, clippity-clippity-clippity-clippity-clippity-clop and long. There's some needles and some thread for the local general store. A present from Sears Roebuck that a bride is waiting for. Some rheumatism pills for the settlers in the hills. Get along. Clopping through the wind and the rain. They'll keep going till they drop. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop, clippity-clippity, clippity-clippity, clippity-clopping along.
Of course, there was a ranger that was responsible in great measure for the success of those particular records, Vic Schoen, who was the conductor for the Randu Sisters. And he was great at that type of accompaniment that would fit what we were doing. Songs like the ones you just mentioned. Those arrangements were Vic's arrangements. And Jack knew that, and he always put us with Vic whenever we recorded together.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze and listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. Yonder till I see the mountains rise.
I was a ride to the ridge where the west commences, and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses, and I can't look at harbors, and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
Association with Crosby continued through various sponsorships, various networks. We went with Chesterfield and General Electric.
Sound off Chesterfield. Bring him back to Chesterfield and do it today. Someone.
Crosby Show for Chesterfield. Produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Doug Collins of the Bears, and Bing's guests, Mr. Humphrey Bogart and Miss Lauren Bacall.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now...
Really?
Yes, really.
Surprise to me. Really?
You haven't seen them at all? And now, ladies and gentlemen, with St. Patrick's Day just a few days away, we'd like to present a man who wears the green and sings with a groan, Bing O'Crosby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the thing you are. You're right. St. Patrick's Day will soon be upon us. I tell you, we used to have some real St. Patrick's Day parties when I was a kid up in Spokane.
Really?
Oh.
What'd you do at the party?
Oh, we'd all gather over at somebody's house, push back the furniture, roll back the rugs, and fight.
Sounds jolly. Well, Bing, they have lots of St. Patrick's Day parties right here in Hollywood. Doesn't Pat O'Brien throw a big party every year?
Oh, he throws a wing ding, I want to tell you. The whole mob gets together at O'Brien. Frank McHugh, Bill Goggin, Dave Butler, Jimmy Caney, Leo McCary, Leo Fitzgerald, Jack O'Melveny, and Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio? I thought the party was just for the Irish. How'd he get in there?
Oh, he makes wonderful meatballs.
Bing, tell me more about Pat O'Brien's affair. What time does the St. Pat's party usually break up?
Well, I'll give you a rough idea, Ken. Last year, when I left O'Brien's house after the party, I passed a vacant lot, and I saw a fellow putting up a fireworks stand. Quite funny. So, Ken, we've sort of been talking along the Irish vein. I think it might be a good time to spring a new Irish tune. This was written by Mr. Preston Foster, eminent actor of the films. You're acquainted with him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And Perry Bodkin, our guitar player, wrote the melody. It's called Two Shillelagh O'Sullivan. This is Irish with sort of a Western decor. John O'Scott, are you ready? Ah, he was a mighty man. Listen to what I'm telling you now. A mighty, mighty man. There's many a man for the horse across the Western plain. There's never been one like the Irishman. O'Sullivan was his name. He never packed his shooting iron. The need he never felt. With two shillelaghs always there, hanging on his belt.
Oh, yippee-ki-yo, yippee-ki-yo,
vigor and yippee-ki-yo.
Two shillelaghs, O'Sullivan, he'll give any man a go.
Oh, the shillelaghs. Of course, you know what we call it, don't you? The Tipperary rifle. You never have to reload it.
This bronco busting Irishman from the side of Erin's Isle was after living peaceful like he always wore a smile. But when the smile was leaving him, in a fight he'd come unwound. Bad steps to any cloth in him, and they'd wind up on the ground.
Oh, yippee-ki-yo, yippee-ki-yo,
yippee-ki-yo, yippee-ki-yo, shillelaghs O'Sullivan, he'd give any man a go.
Why, he was so strong, O'Sullivan, he could put his right hand in his own left hip pocket and he could hold himself out at arm's length.
No man can do that.
It's O'Sullivan I'm talking about.
Oh, well, he could.
Now go on back and sit down.
Across the range from morn to night, road for days and days, a fixing fences here and there and a picking up the sway. A cattle spread he really built, as big as Ireland, where he could range a million heads and a shamrock to be his friend.
Oh, yippee-ki-yo, yippee-ki-yo,
big order and yippee-ki-yo, to Shillelagh O'Sullivan, he'd give any man a friend.
I can miss handle the toe, the shoe, the boot.
Oh, to Shillelagh O'Sullivan.
Now, if you're ever riding to the sagebrush wilderness and you suddenly come upon acres and acres of shamrock sprinkled with stardust, well, you'll be after knowing that you've just arrived at the O'Sullivan's friend, known as the Lazy Leprechaun. Stop in, won't you? Mm-hmm. Have a cup of tea. Tequila, that is. Mask is off. Yes, the mask is off in cigarette advertising.
To Chesterfield, I had quite a squabble with him. My mother was very anti-smoking. In fact, she never allowed her daughters to smoke in her presence, even though they were mothers themselves, her daughters. And Chester, I used to do a commercial for him now and then on the program. And they had a program around the time of Mother's Day, and they wanted me to say, get your mother a carton of cigarettes for her Mother's Day present. And I refused to read the line. I think I was fired because of that. I can't remember, but it was quite an imbroglio anyhow about it. I can't remember whether I quit or I was fired or whether we just stopped speaking and finished out the term.
For your smoking pleasure and protection. They satisfy millions. A little earlier in the program, we made an announcement which was received with more than the usual enthusiasm when we indicated that our guests for this evening were going to be Mr. Humphrey Bogart and Miss Lorraine Bacall. That's the attractive couple who paid us a visit just 1 month ago, I believe. I'm happy now to report the arrival of the first of our guests. Dear ladies and gentlemen, then, is the very charming actress, the very charming, delightful lady, Miss Lorraine Bacall.
Hello, Bing.
You're very nice to visit us again, Lorraine.
Now, Bing, let's not be formal.
Formal?
I thought we agreed the last time I was here that you'd call me by my nickname.
Well...
Why can't you call me baby? Oh.
I intended to call you baby, but I always forget.
But why?
Well, I guess because I'm just not used to girl baby. Well, I'll never understand it. But tell me, baby.
Yeah, you said it.
Uh-huh. I did it. I got away with it. Tell me, baby, how's Humphrey getting along now?
Oh, not so good.
What's the matter with
Bing? You should never have let him sing on your program last month.
What happened?
Well, he now firmly believes that he's America's next great crooner.
Well, it's an open field.
Well, in an open field, he doesn't sound bad. But in the house, it's awful.
Why, you're not serious. I can't believe that this boy thinks he's got a voice. Is it honest?
Yeah, and every night he insists on going into the nursery and singing Little Stevie to sleep.
Does the baby like it?
No, I don't think so. When Bogey is singing, he curls up into a ball and sticks the end of his diapers in his ears.
See, you've got a serious problem. Outside of annoying the baby, what other singing does Bogey do?
Well, he always sings in the shower.
You've lost him. He's gone.
He spends hours in there, and he's so silly. He rubs soap in his eyes on purpose.
Why?
So he can cry like Johnny Ray.
You do that with soap, huh? I've tried everything. I couldn't get it.
Bing, stay as sweet as you are.
Thank you. The same to you.
Bing, you've just got to talk Bogey out of this idea that he's a singer. Here he comes now.
Oh, yes, folks, here's Humphrey Bogart. Thank you. Hello, baby.
Hello, baby.
Hi, Bogey. Oh, here, boy. Hold my music. What are you singing? John Peel or something?
Hold your music. What for?
What for?
Yes.
What for? What's the matter, Crosby? You afraid of a little new blood?
Oh, did you get some new blood?
You know what I mean.
I was just asking. I thought I might get some for myself.
Well, don't tell me your troubles.
Well, why don't you just be your sweet, charming self and forget about being a singer?
Yeah, but I just started.
Let me tell you something, Bogey. It just could be, you know, that you're a little too old to start singing.
It just could be that you're old enough to stop singing.
Say, you know something? You could be a reconditioned singer. I see a lot of them advertised on television with new bobbins and everything.
He needs more than bobbins.
Hey, what is this? My own wife.
Now, let's get this straight once and for all. Bing is my favorite singer, and you're my favorite husband.
You're still playing his record of Mule Train. Even the mules gave up on that.
Well, I'm not giving up.
Yeah? Let me tell you something. Arthur Godfrey wants me on his talent scout program. But I can't get anyone to be my talent scout.
Why don't you try the Boy Scouts of America? They're cooperative.
Your display of jealousy is boring me. Pardon me while I spray my throat.
Oh, get this. He's got an atomizer yet.
Yeah, not bad.
It's a good spray, huh?
It ought to be. That's the only atomizer I ever saw with an olive in it.
man. How I wished I had a spray like that when I was singing at the Coconut Grove in the old days, huh?
Well, didn't you?
That's what I hear.
You know, Bing, show business is funny. When I was a guest on your program before, I thought it was going to be just another radio guest shot. But I sang, and suddenly it hit me. Singing is my racket. It opened up an entire new field for me.
It stands you're not bad out in the field, is it? You know, I think it's hardly fair to your public or to your admirers to just stand here and talk about your singing. I think it'd be very nice if you're serious about it, just sing a number for the folks. Sing it right now.
Well, I'd be very happy to.
Bing, how could you?
I'm getting tired. I want to get off my feet for a minute.
So what'll I sing, baby? Tulips and Heather, that song Perry Como does so well.
Why don't you sing that corny little sea shanty that you know so well?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, for my first selection, I will sing The Bold Fisherman. A bright, yet compelling song of the sea. Fisherman that sailed from off Billingsgate to catch the bold piggy and the gay mackerel. But when he got off in the cold, the wind did begin to blow, and the little boat wibble wobble so that overboard went he, singing, wink. Winky-doodle-dum, a highly interesting song that he sung. Winky-doodle-dum, winky-doodle-dum, old fisherman. Winky-doodle-dum, winky-doodle-dum. Was a highly interesting song that he sung. Ring-a-dee-dee-dee-dong,
great.
Bing, think what you're
doing.
I'm
not kidding, baby. His voice grows on a fella.
Like a vine.
It's a little creepy.
Now, never mind my singing. Let's talk about the African Queen for a while.
Bogey, it's no trouble at all to talk about the African Queen because it's a wonderful picture, great color. You and Katharine Hepburn, I understand, are up for Academy Awards as a result of this picture.
Well, I hope Hepburn wins an Oscar. I sent her a little mahogany shelf to put it on.
Well, that was a very, very nice gesture. Very nice of you to send her the shelf.
Well, he bought, too.
Oh, I got mine to... I got mine to put my metronome on.
Oh.
Hey, you know, there was one scene in The African Queen that really killed me. The scene where you had the whips and jingles, you know, the hangover?
Mm-hmm.
And Hepburn took all your gin and poured it in the river. You just slumped to the deck of the boat and you did nothing about it.
That, I believe, was the greatest test of my acting career.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to present a radio version of The African Queen. Miss Lorraine Bacall will play the part of Rose Sayer. The prim English lady is portrayed on the screen by Miss Catherine Hepburn. I will play the part of Charlie Allnut, the rough riverboat captain, trader, and jack of all trades. May I ask a question?
Shoot.
Now, I'd like to shoot, but I'll just ask the question. What part do I play in this impending clam bake?
We have made elaborate plans for you, Fogey. We've got that all straightened out. You're going to narrate the story.
We straightened it out.
Baby mm-hmm. and me.
And Bogey makes three.
That's right.
Okay. I'll narrate it, but watch out.
Well, we can take it. You just go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now present a radio version of The African Queen.
The part of the girl in the picture was played by Miss Katharine Hepburn, one of our foremost actresses. Tonight, it will be played by Miss Lauren Bacall, a housewife.
Wait till we get home.
In the picture, the part of the man was played by Mr. Humphrey Bogart, who is famous for his dramatic role. Tonight, it will be played by Mr. Bing Crosby, a cigarette salesman. This cannot possibly help the picture.
Now, don't make faces. Come on.
The play which we now present deals with the perilous journey of a man and a woman cruising down the treacherous Ulanga River in Africa in a 30-foot launch to sink the German gunboat Königin Luisa.
Only tonight we're not going to sink the German gunboat.
Now, what are you going to sink?
We're going to sink the shrimp boat.
Well, I can't knock that. But we now take you to Africa. Theme music, please. Play opens, we find Mr. Crosby and Miss McCall sitting on Mr. Crosby's launch discussing their perilous trip down the river.
I don't care if you want to sink the shrimp boats or not, ma'am. I've been thinking it over and it's impossible. This is a treacherous, winding, tricky river full of rocks and rapids and cataracts and waterfalls. We'd never make it down to the lake. Why, this little boat would be dashed to pieces before we knew it. I'd like to help you, ma'am, but what you ask is out of the question. It'd be plain suicide to attempt this journey. So forget about sinking them shrimp boats. We're not even going to try it.
Oh, come on, baby. Do it for me.
Okay, here we go.
And thus, with that hokey beginning, commences the journey of the African Queen. As the boat chugs down the river along the edge of the dense jungle, we see and hear many wild animals. Lion. Elephant.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bob Fancy Pants Hope.
Ah, boom! I'd like to capture that specimen. He's got the longest arms I've ever seen.
Ahead is a tremendous cataract, a waterfall which takes a sheer drop of 75 feet into a boiling chasm below.
There's a bad waterfall up about a mile ahead, man.
I may bounce out of the boat. Put your arms around me.
Okay, baby. I got you.
Tighter.
Hey, where do you get there? Break it up.
What's the matter, baby?
This is a river in Africa, not the tunnel of love.
This man has an appalling lack of dramatic appreciation.
Hear that, ma'am? You hear it? Hear them savages singing on them shrimp boats?
It's blood curdling.
Ma'am, I'll just take this old oxygen cylinder here and make a torpedo. Let's see now, how did old Bogey do that in the picture? Hey, look out for that stuff. I don't know what I'm doing. I'll just put this detonator on here and I'll tap the top on. Not going on.
I'll tap it a little harder.
Harder?
This version of the African Queen.
I think the sound man's got the bend. Take him out.
we're not through with this thing yet.
What do you mean?
Well, baby and I haven't sung our song yet. We're going to do a duet in the sketch, weren't we?
Yeah, let's do it now, babe.
Certainly. The duet was the punch to the whole darn sketch. Yeah. You're going to blow it.
A nice old number. I don't know why.
And you're singing it with a nice old number, too.
You're nice yourself. Let's go, then. Baby, what do you say we ankle over to the Brown Derby, huh?
Oh, what for? Well, your atomizer's empty, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, so it is. Well, let's go, Bing.
Okay.
Who's going to be with you next week?
Oh, next week, Lauren, we broadcast from Palm Springs, California. Our guest is going to be Mr. Jimmy Stewart.
See you next week, then, folks. And meanwhile, remember, Chesterfields are much milder with an extraordinarily good taste. And from the report of a well-known research organization, Chesterfield leaves no unpleasant aftertaste. They satisfy and visit. Good night, folks, and thank you very, very much.
The Bing Crosby Show, presented by Chesterfield, was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Bill Morrow and Murdo McKenzie. Tune in next week and hear Bing and his guest, Jimmy Stewart. Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall can be heard weekly on their own radio program, The Bold Venture.
Reminiscing, I feel you near once more. Yesteryear.
Be with us next week for another nostalgic look at radio of yesteryear.
And now it's just about time we were picking up our members and moving along our way. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these songs and the memories that go with them as much as I've enjoyed bringing them to you. And I'll be keeping my weather eyes peeled. Yes, sir. Looking for you all to join us the next time we drop around this way for a friendly little get-together. And I hope that'll be real soon, folks. And until then, this is your old friend, Singin' Sam, saying goodbye for now.
Same Time, Same Station is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Special research by Martin Halperin. And I'm Bill Brown. Next week, the final chapter of Bing Crosby's radio story. Bing picks his favorites.
I know you won't want to miss it, so be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.